Today's shiur will be beginning on Daf Nun Vov Amud Beis at the bottom, Maseches Bofa Basra. We recommend before going on in the shiur to print out the Dapim of Gemara, and better yet, to order your volume of Maseches Bofa Basra, of the Shas Ozer. The last topic we had been discussing dealt with issue of testimony. The Gemara begins with a quote from the Mishnah, and we'll do that at the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Beis. Shlosha achin ve'echod mitztaref imohen. Hare elu shalosh edios. If you have three brothers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and you have an outsider, we'll call him Bill, and they testify about a chazok of 3 years as follows. Reuven and Bill testify about year one. Shimon and Bill testify about year two. Levi and Bill testify about year three. This constitutes three separate units of testimony. Vehein edus achas lahazoma. The Rashbam on the Mishnah explained that as far as the din of Hazoma, which means that if these are found to be liars in Hazoma fashion, namely, how could you testify about this and this when you were with us during that time? The rule is that the liars, when they're convicted in that fashion, they have to compensate the one they were trying to cause a loss to. So that this group of people, these three brothers and Bill, will have to compensate that individual. The unique feature of this particular law is that even though there are brothers that are part of this whole episode, and generally speaking, witnesses that are relatives of a first degree, namely very close relatives, they do not constitute a unit of testimony. They cannot, two brothers, for example, cannot offer testimony in Jewish law, and the halacha refers to even if Moshe and Aaron came to court and testify, they would not be accepted. This is what's known as a gzeiras hakosev. It's not a function of a chashash of our suspecting that they're going to be lying. Hence the example of Moshe and Aaron is found in the halacha. But the Torah doesn't want two brothers or father and son to come and testify together. However, as we saw in our Mishnah, according to the Mishnah's din, each year is considered a separate, complete entity. Hence, when you have Bill and Reuven testifying about year one, Bill and Shimon testifying about year two, we're not going to view it as if Reuven and Shimon are together in this. How much of the Chazoka testimony is based on the word of brothers? How much of the Chazoka testimony is based on Bill's word? We can say as follows. Bill is responsible for 50% of what's going on. You saw that Bill is testifying about each one of the years, year one, year two, and year three, but Bill is not good enough on his own. So join him up with an additional witness, and you get legitimate testimony. But in an overall sense, we can say that Bill is responsible for 50% of the chazaka, and the brothers are responsible for the other 50% of the chazaka. With that brief illustration in mind, let's continue in the Gemara on the top of Nun Zayin Omet Aleph. Hahu shtora dahavu chasimi olei bei trei. It was a document indicating a loan had been extended, and there were two witnesses that signed this document. In order for the lender to collect, it was necessary for him to have the signatures verified. That creates strength to the document, enabling him to collect money with it. What happened, though, in our case? Shochiv chad minaya. One of the signatories died before the signatures were verified in a court of law. So, what do we have? We have two signatures. The signer, one signer is dead. The other signer is alive. Also, achvo dehai dekoi v'chad achrina le'asudi achasimos yodei de'idoch. The brother of the witness that signed, that is still alive. So you have the brother of the live signer coming to court together with another person, testifying or verifying the signature of the dead man. In other words, these two people are saying, we recognize to be this as his signature. But he's dead, the fellow died, and we're verifying his signature. As far as the other signature is concerned, the fellow who signed it is still alive. He can come along and say, this is my signature. And that's considered verification. Sovar Ravino Lemeimar, Ravino, in viewing this incident, figured, Hainu Masnisin, Gimel Achin, the Echot Mitztaref Imohem. The verification of the signatures here seems to parallel the case of the Mishnah, where you had several brothers that were testifying along with an outsider to create the Chazakah, to establish the Chazakah. So too, you have a couple of brothers. One is alive, he testifies about his own signature. You have his brother and an outsider testifying about the deceased's signature. And just like in the Mishnah, they were considered separate units of testimony and were able to add up to form testimony about a complete chazakah. So too over here, Ravina feels that this would be considered legitimate verification of the shtar. Omar le Rav Ashi, mi domi. How can you compare these two cases? Hasam lo nofik nechiriva de mamona apuma de achi. In the case of the Mishnah, Hasam is the Mishnah case, you don't have 3/4 of the testimony based on brother testimony. The literal translation is lo nofik. There isn't, let's say, the taking away of money. How much nechi means less than riva, a quarter, less a quarter of the whole, namely 3/4 of the money, de mamona, apuma de achi, according to the testimony of brothers. How did we explain that before? We saw the 3 years of testimony, and we had asked, how much of the 3 years is being verified by brothers? So we saw there, 50% of the testimony was based on the brothers, and 50% was based on that outsider, Bill, who joined up. Hacha, in the case of the shtar verification, nofik nechi riva de mamona, namely 3/4, because nechi means minus riva, a quarter. Minus a quarter from the whole means, in simpler terms, 3/4 of the testimony concerning the verification of the witnesses, apuma de achi. How does that work? Let's go over it. How many signatures were on the shtar? 2 signatures were on the shtar. One brother is the one who signed it. He's saying, this is my signature. So that's verification of 50% of the shtar. The other signature was signed by a dead, he's the person who signed it is now dead. So we have 2 witnesses testifying about that. One of the 2 witnesses is a brother of the first guy. So as far as that's concerned, half of the second signature is also by word of the brother. Half of 50% is 25%. So you have 25% based on this brother, and then 50% of the signatures was based on his brother. That's 75% of this testimony based on the word of brothers. That is going too far. The Mishnah that we're about to learn is accompanied by a topic heading on the outside margin. You notice the expression nosei. Dugmois shel dvorim sheyesh lohem chazoka sheodom makpid alehem im lo birishus. We're going to have examples of things that, if they're there for a while, the owner of those things will gain a chazoka on their presence, on their location, because otherwise, if he did not gain legitimate permission to have those items there, the other fellow, the owner of the area, would have certainly protested. However, there are other items that we have listed here. Beis she'ein lohem chazaka. Why? The adam lo hoya makpid aleihem. The other type of items that their presence doesn't bother the owner of the area. Hence, he's not motivated to issue a macha, to issue his protest. And it's the owner of the item that's located there. He cannot claim chazaka to it. The Mishnah. Eilu dvorim she'esh lohem chazaka ve'eilu dvorim she'ein lohem chazaka. Hoyamamid behemo b'chotzer, tanur rechayim v'kirayim, u'migdal tarnagolim, v'nosein zivlo b'chotzer, eino chazaka. If a person had stood his animal in a chotzer, or a person set up his stove or his grindstone, that's the tanur, a stove, rechayim, a grindstone, the kirayim, another form of stove, migdal tarnagolim, or a hen coop, and nosein zivlo b'chotzer, place his fertilizer material in a chotzer, eino chazoka avol, osa mechitza lebehem togavo asura tfochim. If in addition to having his animals standing in the chotzer, he also built a fence of 10 tfochim around the area that his behemoth is standing in, v'chein latanor, v'chein lekirayim, v'chein lerechayim, or he fenced off the area that these items were sitting in, hichnis tarnagolim l'toch habayis, or a person brought his chickens into someone else's house, or v'osa mokoim lezivlo amoik shlosha oigavoya shlosha, or he dug out a depression or created a mound and placed the zevel, the fertilizer material, in the ditch that he dug out or the mound that he created. Hare zu chazaka. The Gemara asks, "Mai shno reisha umai shno seifa?" Why in the reisha does the Mishnah say eino chazaka? And in the Seifa, there is a chazaka. The question being, even in the Reisha, imagine you have a courtyard. It's under your ownership. And some outsider comes and stands his behemoth in your courtyard. You're not going to say something. You're not going to issue a macha. Hey, what's your animal doing in my yard? Of course you will. So the question is, why in the Reisha of the Mishnah does it say eino chazaka? Of course the person would have protested, and if he's quiet, then the owner of the animal would gain a chazaka in having gained rights to have his behemoth continue standing there. We encounter now some geometric forms, and this draws our attention to the introductory remarks concerning the structure. So notice the Mivneh note on the outside margin, the triangles you see, and also you also notice a numbering system between the thin space between the Gemara and the Rashbam to help you keep track of where the triangles are found. These are tshuvos la she'elah. their answers to the question of Maishno Reisha, that we said Eino Chazoka, Maishno Seifa, the Havi Chazoka. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to see diamonds. And those will be explained when we get to it. The question, once again, is what's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? The Reisha we saw, Eino Chazoka, and the Seifa we saw, Chazoka. When in the Reisha, the owner of the property would certainly have protested those things being there. Omar Ula. Ula tries to establish a rule. Kol she'ilu b'nichsei hager kona, any type of behavior or action that in the case of nichsei hager would have been a means of acquiring it. Namely, you have a convert that died leaving no heirs. I come along to what's called unowned property and I do something. For example, I build a machitza or I turn over soil. Those are actions that would be koine, that would acquire for you the nichsei hager. B'nichsei chavero kona. If a person does those similar actions in his friend's property, his friend's owned property, so, and the guy keeps quiet, so after 3 years, or after a certain amount of time, you would be able to acquire it. Kol she'ilu b'nichsei hager loy kona, b'nichsei chavero lo kona. And if one practices an action that in the nichsei hager would not have acquired it for him, because of its lack of significance, the same action in nichsei chavero would also be loy kona. Just notice the marking system that we've used here. There's the dashed underline that appears under kona, and then again kona. That's part of the A clause of Ula's rule. You see kona, kona, and then in the B clause, you have lo kona, lo kona. Maskif lo Rav Sheshes. As we go on in the Gemara, Rav Sheshes will see questions the rule or the relationship that Ula presented. He asks, Uklolahu, is the rule that Ula stated consistent or is it reliable? Vihare, and now we see these diamonds. A note on the side indicates, Dugmois Shesoisris Haklal Shula. We're going to have examples that contradict Ula's attempted rule. What was the structure of Ula's rule? That kona by ger, kona by chavero. Lo kona by ger, lo kona by chavero. Let's check it out now. Vare nir. Nir has to do with plowing. Tebenichse hager kona. If I plow up a field that was left by a convert that died without heirs, and I plow it, I acquire the field. Benichse chavero, lo kona. If I plow my friend's property, he'll be happy. He's not going to protest it. I could do it for 20 years, plow up his property, and he'll be happy every time I do it. So, hence, as a result of being an action that doesn't invite a protest, lo kona. Noting the markings, what do we see here? We see in nichsei hager, we see kona. According to Ula, what should have been? If by nichsei hager kona, then the same action by nichsei hager should have been kona. But yet here we know it's lo kona. And again, another example. Vahare achilas peros. Using the fruits. Eating the fruits of a field. Tebenichsei chavero kona. Using the fruits of your friend's field. And he keeps quiet. That's kona. That's the ultimate drawing of protest. You were drawing fire by using his fruits, and he kept quiet, so it's kona. Benichse hager, if you go to the property that was owned by a ger and he died, and he has fruit trees growing, plants are growing with vegetation, and you eat it, lo kona. So another example that contradicts the Ula rule. Elo Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Bar Avua. What are we trying to answer? So if a person would have lost track of the Gemara, he uses the markings to help him navigate. If he sees a triangle here, he goes back to where he saw a previous triangle. And over there, he should be close to the point in the Gemara where the question was raised. The question had been, Maishno Reisho, Maishno Seifa. What's the difference between the first section of Mishnah that said Eino Chazaka and the latter section that says Harezu Chazaka? So he answers, Hacha Bechotzer Hashutfin Askinan. We're not talking about an outsider that came with his animal and stood it up in your yard. We're talking about an area, the chotzer was owned by partners. And one of the partners brought his animal to stand in their jointly held property. The Gemara says, "Debahamodo kedi lo kapti, amachitza kapti," that on simple standing of an animal in the jointly held domain, so the other partner is not going to open his mouth. However, if one partner takes the initiative and fences off an area of the jointly held chotzer as if to claim it for himself, so he certainly would issue a protest. And if he's quiet, so we could say Harezu Chazaka. The Gemara asks, Ubahamoda Kedi, for simple, mere standing, lo kapti? Is that so that people are not going to issue an objection? Gemara says we have a source. V'hotnan Hashutfin shenodru hano ze mise. Asurin likones lechotzer. Mishnah in the Dorim says you have two partners that owned a piece of a chotzer jointly. Neither one can enter the jointly held chotzer. What do we see? That mere entrance to a jointly held area itself arouses objections. Elo Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Bar Avua. Hocho, our Mishnah that mentioned that standing up of a behema does not itself cause protest. In other words, people don't mind it. The Mishnah is Berachbo Shalachore Batim Askinan. We're not talking about the commonly used courtyard area. We're talking about an area that exists behind houses. It's not an area that's used for people's common purposes. It just happens to be an enclosed area that's part of the property. It's listed in the property registry, but it's not commonly used. It's called a rachba. That's in back of the houses. Debahamodo kedi lo kapti. That on mere standing up of things over there, people would not be issuing objections. V'amachitza kapti. So the hesber between the issue of maishno reishno, maishno seifa, in the reisha which spoke about hamoda, people are not makbid, we're talking about hamoda in the rachba. The seifa that mentions the building of a machitza, we're talking about building of a machitza in the rachba. That is a case people would be makbid on. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us draw our attentions to some of the markings that we've seen here. The marking that you saw, this geometric form on the top line that enclosed Chotzer HaShutfin, we have a note on the outside margin where it says Mivneh, Simun Kedei Lahavlit HaHevdeil Ben Shtei HaTshuvos Shel Rabo Bar Avua. The marking here is to bring out the difference between the two answers. And the first answer that Rabo Bar Avua had suggested was talking about, the Mishnah was talking about a Chotzer HaShutfin. The Gemara, though, raised a question from the Mishnah on Nedarim on that answer, and Rabo Bar Avua came up with another answer, saying that our Mishnah was not talking about a Chotzer HaShutfin, but rather Rachbo area. So that's what the role of that particular marking was, to accentuate the difference between the two answers. The triangles that we saw here a triangle by Rabbo Bar Avuha. In the margin, it was called two bays. Why have we noted it thusly? Because if you see a bays, you have to search for an aleph. Where was the aleph? It was on Omer Aleph, and it was on the bottom line. We had Rabbo Bar Avuha, first version of Rabbo Avuha. These triangles were all part of a series of attempted answers to answer the question of Maishno Reisho, Maishno Sefer. We saw Ula give an answer. Rav Sheshes, though, knocked that down. Then we saw Rav Nachman, Omar Rabbo Bar Avuha give an answer. And we saw that ran into trouble from the Mishnah in Nedarim. And then we had a restatement of that. Namely, it was Rav Nachman, Rabbo Bar Avuha, restating it, mentioning Rachbo. We have another marking. This volcano marking is also explained on the side. Tshuvot be'ikvot akushya minidorim. These are answers in light of the objection that was raised from the Dorim. In other words, we gave initially an answer of Maishno Resha, Maishno Seifa, setting up the Mishnah talking about a Chotzer HaShutfin. Then a Chotzer of Shutfin, and one partner stands his animal up in the Chotzer, he's not going to raise the objection of the owner, of the other partner. Then we ask from the Mishnah in the Dorim, but standing in a Chotzer HaShutfin can create objection, as we saw where they were Nodir Hanoa one from the other, where they forswear receiving benefit one from the other. There was an objection to one's standing in the Chotzer. So you can't speak about a Chotzer as being a place of no objection. We had the first answer to the issue of Nedarim, that's the volcano marking, was the first answer to that particular question. In other words, as far as this sugya is concerned, there are two things taking place at once. We had asked the question of Maishno Reisha, Maishno Seifa. That question was dealt with by the triangles here. Another piece of action taking place in the Gemara is an objection from the Mishnah Nedarim. How do you get out of that objection? So that we're using the volcano marking to address. The first approach, therefore, was the suggestion that our Mishnah is not talking about a Chotzer, but rather about the Rachbo. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Popa Omar, Idi V'idi, our Mishnah and Nedarim B'Chotzer HaShutfin. We're not, according to Rav Popa, we can continue talking about Chotzer HaShutfin. Ve'ika dekapti, ve'ika delo kapti. As far as the mass of humanity is concerned, having a behemoth stand in a Chotzer, some people object, some people don't object. Gabi mamona lekula. As far as the issue of our Mishnah, which deals with monetary matters, we're dealing with a chazoka, issue of a chazoka. Lekula. We're lenient with regard to the level of hakpoda, level of objection. We're lenient and say people don't object. Hence, if people don't object, so one does not gain a chazaka through such behavior. However, gabi isura, regarding the issue of isur veheter, non-financial related, but rather halachically related matters, when you're dealing with isur veheter. And the example at hand is what? Example of nidorim, of vows, and forbidden benefit. There, lechumra. There we say the objection level is more prominent. And we say in the realm of nidorim, people will be makbid. Even though as far as the general population is concerned, there are these kind and that kind. So we, as we said, in the case of Mominus, we view it with the leniency approach. In the realm of Nedarim, we view it with the stringency approach. Ravina Omar. Ravina is a third approach to the issue of the objection we raise from Nedarim. The Olam Lo Kapti. As far as standing in a jointly held piece of property, one partner standing as animals there, people are not going to object to that. If people don't object to it, it's hard to consider it a real situation of personal benefit. If we're going to say that it's not considered real personal benefit, why is it then when you have shutfen shel nodru hano zemizeh, where they forswear receiving benefit one from the other, and you have this jointly held chotzer, why does the Mishnah rule that it's forbidden to enter it? What do they forswear from one another? Benefit. But if you're going to tell me people are not makpid on that, people don't really object to it, then my use of it isn't considered a real benefit. It's not something that would arouse the next guy's objection. The Gemara says, "V'ha money, the Mishnah in the Dorim, Rabbi Eliezer, he." This conforms to his particular approach. Desanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afilu vitor, osur b'mudar hano. Vitor, in modern Hebrew, you have the expression levater. It's to give up on, to let pass over. Rabbi Lezer holds that when you're dealing with mudur hano, people that actively forswear benefit one from the other, then even things that are of a very minor nature, namely things that are vitur, people that pass up on these kind of things, here it becomes accentuated and hence forbidden. As you see now in the Gemara, there's a slash. This indicates a new thought process, new topic that comes up with Rabbi Yochanan now. We have some markings that draw our attention, and we want to know what are we to expect over here. First and foremost, you see a firebox. The firebox indicates a name or idea that will occupy the Gemara for more than an omid. And as far as we're concerned, Rabbi Benoah will keep us occupied down through Nun Ches Omid Aleph. In addition to the firebox that you see here as a lead-off in the sukya, here's where he appears for the first time, we've also double underlined his name. And on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh heading, Sidra shel Izkurim shel Rabbi Banoah. It's a series of mentionings of Rabbi Banoah. The Rashbam on Daf Nun Ches Amud Aleph tells us that Rabbi Banoah was an Odom Godol. He was a choshev person, an important individual. There's a note in the Rashbam that serves as a basis of our marking system. You'll notice there's a Rashbam about 10 lines approximately from the bottom. There's an asterisk that makes it easier to find that we've drawn in. Ba mine Rabbi Yochanan me Rabbi Benoah shmaitin de Rabbi Benoah kachoshe v'ozil agav groro dahach de li'el. The Mishnah Gemara is going to be mentioning different teachings of Rabbi Benoah since we had to mention him at the beginning. Let us take a look in the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Benoah. Bakol, in all fixed tashmishin. Fixed tashmishin meaning things that are used on a regular basis and on a constant basis. Shutfin me'akfin ze et ze. If one of the partners of this jointly held chotzer want to object, I don't want you to do this, whatever particular action is done on a constant, regular basis, I don't want you to do it. He's able to object. Chutz min hakvisa. With the exception of clothes washing. Before we go on, we will just take a look at the Rashbam on the wide lines under the Tosfos. He says, "Bechol shutfin ma'akvin, bechol tashmishin hakvuin b'chotzer, dumya da'amodas behemas tano v'kirayim." Things that are of regular use in a chotzer, for example, having behemas stand there. People will have their Bema stand there on a daily basis, or setting up their tanur, their kirayim, their ovens. Shemimatin avir chotzer. They, by their presence there, there's less airspace. There's someone's one-ton cow standing in the chotzer. There's going to be less airspace, or the chotzer, or the tanur, or the kirayim. Yecholim la'akev im ho'echad rotze lasos levado v'chaverov ein rotzim lasos kein. If one wants to do it and the others don't want him to do it, so they can object. Chutz min akvisa, with the exception of clothes washing. What's the reason that if one of the members of the chotzer insists on having his kvisa done, his washing done in the chotzer, the others cannot object? The Gemara explains, She'ein darkon shel benois Yisrael lehisbazois al hakvisa. What does that mean? So we'll take a look at the Rashbam. Lefi she'ein darkon lehisbazos shetzrichois lamod shom yechefois. Women that were usually the ones to take care of the clothes washing, they would go to the river and stand in the water, bent over, washing the clothes. In order to do that, they have to roll up their clothing from their feet, thereby exposing their calves, the lower part of their feet. La'amod banohar. So we, halacha is very concerned with the humility and the tznius of Benos Yisrael, of our women folk, and if we can avoid public display, physical display, all the better. Hence, have the kvisas done, have the washing, clothing washing done in a private enclosed area known as a chotzer. Much better than having that take place at the river. So that even if some of the members of the chotzer are not happy with that taking place in the chotzer, our concern for the modesty of Jewish women overrules. Pasuk says, V'oitzim einov meraos bera. Pasuk is praising someone who closes his eyes from beholding that which is negative. Omer Abchia Baraba. Who's being praised in this pasuk? Ze she'ein mistakel benoshim b'shal she'oimdois al hakvisa. This is someone who does not gaze upon women as they are doing the wash. Hechi domi? The Gemara asks, what are the circumstances that the pasuk is praising he who closes his eyes? Now, what's mashma from this? There is praise for one who closes his eyes. Let's say he doesn't close his eyes. So what we're going to say, he's not praiseworthy, but he's also not a rosha. What are the circumstances of that? Namely, closing the eyes, you get praise. Not closing the eyes, he's not a rosha. The Gemara goes on. E deika darka achrita, if there's an alternative route that this person could have gone on, as opposed to the river route, he could have gone on some other path, and he chooses to go on the river route, roshahu. And the Rashbam adds very dramatically, even if he closes his eyes, he's considered a rosha. Why is that? Because we have a principle that says, it's basically the Gemara in Chulin, harchek min akiur, stay away from problematic situations. You had a choice. You could have gone on the alternative route, avoiding the women. But you chose to go on the river route, thereby encountering the women. True, you may have closed your eyes, but by making the choice to go on the problematic route, he's considered a Rasha. The Gemara goes on. E the leka dirka achrita. There's no other root. Onus who? Rashi says over here, onus who im mistakel derech alichosoy. If he happens to see the women as he's walking along this route, and he has no alternative route, he's considered onus. It's beyond his control if he happens to notice the women. V'oynes rachmona patre. V'loma mazkiko hakosuv lahatsim einov. Why does the pasuk expect him to close his eyes? De mishtabeach beikro. From the fact that the pasuk is praising the one who closed his eyes, Shamino de tzorach latzomenov, that we're expecting him to close his eyes. The Gemara goes on. Li'olam de leko dirka achrita. We're talking about a case where a person has no alternative path. He has to go on the path by the women. Ve'afilu hachi miboyale lemeinas nafshei. Even so, he still has to strain himself. He has to put himself out to close his eyes, to avoid looking at them. At this point, the Gemara continues with Rebbe Bana, but nothing to do with the matters we just discussed, at least on the simplistic level. And we saw already the Rashbam made reference to the idea that we're going to see a list of things that concern Rebbe Bana, but the items themselves don't have a direct relationship to one another, certainly on the superficial level. Bominei Rebbe Yochanan me Rebbe Bana. Choluk shel Talmid Chacham Ketzad. The choluk is a garment, and how is the Talmud Chacham expected to be dressed while wearing the choluk? The choluk, I'll just point out in anticipation of the Gemara that comes later, the choluk is not the uppermost garment. It's not a coat. It's a lower level of garment than the outermost garment. So the choluk of a Talmud Chacham, how is it? Kol she'ein besoroi nireh mitachtov. It covers all of his body. In other words, all parts of the body that are usually covered are, in fact, covered. The Rashbam explains, Kol she'ein besoro nira mitachtov, she'oruch ad pisas ragloi, shelo yira'eh she'kesheyelech yochef. It should be so long, so as to cover his feet, that if the Talmud Chacham were walking barefoot, you wouldn't see his bare feet. Continuing in the Gemara, and it's noteworthy, you see these house forms. The house forms are explained on the outside margin. They are pritim, shonim, shel talmidei chachamim, different items that are associated with the Talmud Chacham. Heich heim nirim, how do they appear? We've also employed the broken dashed line, the underlining, each time you see Talmud Chacham emphasized. The next item, talis shel Talmud Chacham ketzad. The talis is the outer garment, outermost garment. How is that to be seen with regard to a Talmud Chacham? Answer, kol she'ein chaluko nire mitachtov tefach. In other words, the garment under this outermost garment itself is completely covered, with the exception of an area of an amount of that that's less than a tefach. There should not be a tefach, a handbreadth of choluk visible when he, the Talmud Chacham, is wearing his talis. Talis being a reference to outermost garment. Shulchan shel Talmud Chacham ketzad. It's an illustration, 473 in the Pirush Chai, that will help appreciate this section of Gemara. How should the table of a Talmud Chacham appear? The Gemara answers, Shnei Shlishi Gdil, two-thirds covered by a cloth, a tablecloth, Ushlish Galoi, and one-third of the table exposed. On the exposed part of the table, the Olav Keoros V'Yerek, on that part would be the bowls, serving bowls, and the vegetables. The taboasoi mibachutz, and the ring or hook that the table, when not in use, is suspended by, that is located on the outside part, namely on the far part of the table, not next to where the people are sitting. The Gemara asks, V'ha tanya tabato mi bifnim. We have a source that indicates that the tabas, this hook or ring protrusion, should be located on the inner side of the table, next to where they're sitting. So we have two versions here. We have one version that says the tabas is mibachutz, and you notice in the pre-marked edition the dashed underlining under the word mibachutz to contrast it with what's in the source, mibifnim. To resolve this, the Gemara suggests three possibilities, and they're numbered here, 1 through 3. Lo kashya, ha diika yanuka, ha deleka yanuka. If there is a child around who sits next to his father while eating, anyone who's had some experience with little kids, they tend to grab on everything that they can only grab on. So if there's a little kid, a yanuka, sitting with his father, it's recommended that the ring or the hook be on the outside so as to deny the child the possibility of grabbing it and flipping over the table in the middle of their meal. Ha deleka yanuka, if there's no kid there, so it can be on the inside. Both situations, the mibachutz and mifnim, are talking about a case where there's no child. Velo kashya, ha deika shama, ha deleka shama. If there is a waiter or a servant that often carries trays and large pots, he doesn't see where he's walking, so we recommend that the ring be on the inside, so as to avoid him colliding, the servant colliding with the ring. And if there is no servant there, so it can be on the outside. Both situations involve where there is, in fact, a waiter. If it's daytime and there's a chance for him to see where he's going, so the ring can be on the outside. If it's nighttime where the lighting is very poor, so then the ring must be on the inside. Vishel Am Ha'aretz, the table of the Am Ha'aretz, notice we have a dot underline. This dot underline is to contrast, and we also have a little bays in the space between the Rashbam and the Gemara. If there's a bays, it's worthwhile trying to find where the Aleph was. The Aleph was positioned opposite the line where you had the Shulchan Shel Talmud Chacham. You'll notice there was also a dot underline. That's to connect these two points. We're dealing with the Shulchan. The first Shulchan Aleph was the Shulchan of a Talmud Chacham. Here we're dealing with the Shulchan of an Am Ha'aretz. The Gemara says, Doime lemedura ukederos makifos osa. It's like a bonfire where the fire is located in the middle and you have a lot of things around its perimeter. Same thing with his table. He has pots and bowls surrounding his table. The Rashbam at the top says Limadura She Mukefes Kderos. In a bonfire, people are all eating around the bonfire, so you have the fire centrally located and all kinds of pots and what have you located around the fire. So too, the Rashbam says Afkan Hamapo Valechem Beemtza Vakoros Soviv. With that, we end our shiur for today. The Gemara next time will continue with analyzing or observing the different items of a Talmud Chacham. That's it for today.